Basketball Manitoba podcast, we have Amy Barlow-Ogden. She is the founder of the Mini Ballers basketball program that offers entry-level experience to basketball children ages 1 to 8. Amy is a graduate of Oak Park Collegiate, where she was recognized as one of the top players in the province. Additionally, she played for the Manitoba provincial team for 3 summers. She was selected to the invite-only Canada Night Camp, which hosted 50 of the top female basketball players across Canada. After graduating, she was recruited to play at the University of Winnipeg, where she was recognized as Canada West Rookie of the Year, CIS All-Rookie Team, and Canada West Second Team All-Star. She played for the Canada Basketball Development Team in 2008. After playing, she went on to coaching and teaching. She coached at Maples Collegiate, as well was a coach for the TAP program, and the head coach of the U15 Girls Provincial Team program in 2014. She was selected as a guest coach for Canada Basketball Women in National Team Training Center. Amy, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's fun to be here. I love the podcast.
I know. So a lot of people, I think you were one of the people. You're like, hey, I saw you on Shaw. I just get random messages of people saying, like, I saw you on Shaw, and they didn't even know the podcast existed until it was on Shaw. Well, you were one of those people, right?
No. I knew it existed long before that, but it's just so much more convenient now because usually it's I want to say randomly on, because it was kind of random how I discovered it. I usually fold laundry on my bed when my kids go to sleep. And so that's kind of just been my new routine, is like, inevitably, I don't even know when it's on. I just am like, whenever it's my laundry time, I end up seeing it on Shaw and I watch it. So
yeah. No, like I said, it's funny. A lot of people have found it that way, but we were approached by Shaw. They're like, hey, we see you have a podcast. You want to get on? We're like, yeah, of course. And you know, like today's day and age, like I think, you know, before we got online, you're saying I'm having Zoom PTSD here. Everything is online all the time. Right. And like TV is kind of like an afterthought for some people, but now, even though we were like, no one's going to watch this thing on Shaw, so many people watching on Shaw. So anyways, it's kind of a side thing, but I was just surprised because I remember you were like, yeah, I saw it on Shaw, and I've received that message from tons of other people. So now eventually you're going to be sitting there fully enclosed and you're like, oh, I'm on Shaw. Cool. But so excited to have you on. We go, I guess, way, way back. I was playing at Manitoba at the same time you were kind of playing at Winnipeg. So we're somewhat from the same era, slightly different. I'm older than you, but playing around the same time. So I remember you playing, remember you in high school, remember you in college. Obviously, you know, the two schools are very, very close. One thing I do remember about you, phenomenal athlete, right? Super athlete, without question, one of the best athletes I've ever seen in Manitoba. Size, athleticism, and you just played like super, super hard, right? So those are kind of my first memories of you, obviously. And then like just being on UW, which we were like, back then you're supposed to like hate each other. So I was like, whatever. But beside that all said, that's kind of my first memories of you. But what are your first memories of the game of basketball? The big question I always have is, who introduced you to the game? Cause sometimes it's, you're like, I don't know, I just started playing. And other times it's like a specific person. So what's your story?
No, for me, it's, I do remember, and I do know, I always say that basketball chose me. I didn't chose it. Even to the point now that I have a basketball business, it's not really surprising, just because like it's kind of like held on to me and never let me go. And so I grew up, I'm like a first generation Canadian. My parents are Nigerian immigrants. We grew up in like Windsor Park. And then when I was, I think like a toddler, my parents bought land in Linden Woods, which was like being converted from farmland basically.
Yeah, I was going to say farmland back then.
Everybody in my family and like all the other Nigerians, I'm pretty sure, used to like talk trash about my mom for wanting to buy this like suburban overpriced house in this random neighborhood. And so most of my family, lived in like EK, Elmwood, kind of like Windsor Parkish areas, like older developed suburbs. And so my mom and my parents were taxi drivers at the time. And my mom had kind of driven past and saw that it was like a new developing suburb, and they chose to build a house there. And then, so I went to a K-8 school in Linden Woods called A. Kelvin Wallingham. And so went through that experience, and my phys ed teacher, who was like the senior phys ed teacher, there was like an early years, who was Madame Sauter. Her husband at the time was like a newscaster, and we all kind of knew that and thought it was cool. And then the senior phys ed teacher, his name was Jerry Taves, spelt like toes. And I remember that as a kid. And he was just awesome. Like he was like a true believer in like being a multi-sport athlete, and just tried to get us all like super involved in playing a variety of sports. And then I was in French immersion. So anybody who probably goes to French immersion in the province knows that it's almost like this cohorts are smaller oftentimes. And so you kind of become really competitive with like the cohort of kids that you're growing up with. And so thankfully I was in a very like academically strong cohort of kids who all got really good grades. We would be told to do like an 800 meter run, and we would all legit just treat it like it was like the Olympic qualifying. like we were all just super good at like, yeah, taking direction, listening, following. And so we followed Mr. Taves's lead in terms of just like sports participation. And so he had encouraged me to play basketball, I think in the sixth grade, for the grade 7 team, just for like a few filler games, because they didn't have enough players. Mm-hmm. And so I started playing, and I just remember being stressed. Like I legit didn't know the difference between offense and defense. I think like that whole experience, I scored on the wrong basket multiple times. I could remember like everyone in the gym yelling at me when I would get a steal to go in the opposite direction. Like it was stressful times, but I remember it was just like fun. And I remember not really understanding the rules in the game at like a competitive level, but just being so excited to like get steals and try to score. So he was the one who kind of introduced me. And then in the seventh and eighth grade, I just played like on my age team. And then it was really quick. So I went from like grade 6, quick introduction, grade 7, playing on that team. And then by grade 8, I tried out for a team called the Winnipeg Selects at the time, which was kind of like Winnipeg's, like one of their probably first introductions to kind of like AAU style club teams, where you would travel and you would pay a fee to play and there was coaches. Mm-hmm. And so I tried out for that team again, like stressed, got there. Everyone had their parents there sitting in the stands, like ready to like wipe their forehead when they were sweating. Yeah. Like they had their whole, you know, entourage of people just like cheering them on to make these teams. And to be honest, I don't even remember how I heard about it. I think I played like a WNBA club team in and around like the seventh or eighth grade after like my school team. Mm-hmm. And then someone was like, oh, there's this club team. You should try out. And then so I think it was my friend Jackie Glasgow, her mom drove me to this Winnipeg Selects tryout. And so, yeah, I went with them and then I tried out. My parents weren't there. I learned like after the fact that it was going to cost like $1,000, and that was a lot of money that I didn't even know if I could afford. And so I made that team. They told us that there was fundraisers. So I was like, okay, I can like convince my mom to do this. And then after that, that was kind of it. Like that summer I ended up playing for what was called the regional provincial team. So they would make four teams and then they would choose four teams. I think it was like 10 to 12 girls per team or 10 to 12 boys per team. And then they would choose like the final team to go to nationals. Mm-hmm. So I didn't make that final team, but I made one of the four teams. And then by that next summer, I was like bona fide on the provincial team, getting invited to the Nike camp with the top 50 girls. Yeah. I legit went from like scoring on the wrong hoop like 2 years prior to like being considered like a starter for the provincial team. So it was a really quick progression.
But yeah.
To answer your question, Mr. Taves.
Mr. Taves. Yeah. Well, no, but I think I love how you kind of brought us down the whole like journey, because that's not a big period of time. That's like a super small window of time. And obviously like you grew a bit and you're like, you know, but still like from the sixth grade, like what are you in the sixth grade? How old are you? Like 12, 13, 12?
Yeah. You are
turning 12, maybe
11,
right?
Or 12. Yeah.
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 And then by the time you're trying out for that Winnipeg Selects teams, you're like
13.
That's like, yeah. So we're like maybe 3 years, maybe at the most.
14, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's pretty crazy. Like for that type of turnaround. I mean, and now like, obviously people, you know, a lot of people who play basketball start super early, right? It's they just know about it much sooner. But before I kind of like move forward in your story, when you were playing basketball for the first time, obviously you said Mr. Taves had you playing all these other sports. Had you played any other organized sports like soccer or anything like that?
Yeah. So like being Nigerian, soccer is like a huge love. Like you're kind of just like raised, like you go to like your little Nigerian association picnic, like everyone's playing soccer. Like that's just kind of like what's on TV when you're younger. And then I played volleyball. You used to do everything that you do in like your phys ed classes and then the clubs and things like that. And the only thing that I genuinely look forward to was like track and field and basketball. And I think it was just like knowing that like they were it, like for me, like I think it just brought out like my competitiveness and knowing like I could control the outcome pretty, pretty easily. And so like, I loved like the transition element of basketball and I loved in track and field, just like, you know, like the little gun goes and you just,
just go. Take off.
Well,
I guess, there's similarities in just what you mentioned, right? Like the transition aspect of that is that as well, like you get a steal, like you just break out, like just go. Right. Or like even just getting back, just go. Right. Like there's a lot of that in basketball. You're just doing this, then you just have to like take off. So I could see, like that would totally make sense. So you mentioned Mr. Taves, Mr. Toes. So you're moving on, you're playing for the Winnipeg Select. Who are some of those other mentors? Now, I mean, you can go as far forward as you want. I mean, sure, you probably still have mentors to this day, but sticking in that, you know, that in the years around the Winnipeg Selects and moving forward, who are some of those mentors that kind of kept you going and steered you in the right direction, right? Because I hear some people, they have like, oh, my parent, my uncle, whatever, my cousins, but this was kind of something that you were doing on your own with friends. So who were those people that kind of pushed you along and kept you going in the right direction with basketball specifically?
Yeah. So like, this is kind of like where it becomes like a little low key version of like the blind side. Cause
tell me more. That's a nice little teaser right there.
Yeah. A little teaser. So again, like no one in my family cared to put me into sports. Like, I think that it was kind of like one of those assumed realities of just having like athletic capable kids. Like you go to school, like, of course you should play team sports, you know, listen to your coaches, listen to your teachers, don't get in trouble. That was kind of just like how I was raised. It never was designed to go past that. My parents being immigrants, they work so much. So they were just in survival mode for my whole childhood. Right. And so when I showed up to Selects, had the desire and ability to potentially play, at that point, it was kind of up to other people to like fill in the gaps just in terms of like getting me to practices, like encouraging me, you know, helping motivate me. And so I remember the financial part was a thing. And then also, which is like funny that I don't even know that this has almost stopped me from playing basketball, but in the eighth grade, my whole eighth grade class at Van Wallingham was going to space camp in Montreal. And so space camp was like this, like, you know, come like, it's like your birth, like your rite of passage, you're graduating, going to high school and you're going to Montreal. And so I remember it was $1,000 and I had already started like fundraising. And like back in the day, fundraisers were weird. Like I remember going to like a factory and like literally taping boxes, like, and you got paid like 5 cents to tape like cardboard boxes together. Like it was just, the fundraisers were really strange. And I had started doing a bunch of those things to pay for space camp. And then when I made Selects, I remember saying to my coaches at the time, Brad Nance and Andrew Glasgow, some of my friends' parents, they were like dad coaches at the time. Like, I don't know if I can afford this. I don't know if I can do this, blah, blah, blah. There was also Kevin Yeboah, who I saw that interview Debbie. He, like, it's funny now just looking back at this, because like there's a pretty big age difference between Kevin and Debbie. I want to guess that it's maybe like 10 years. Like, that's my guess.
At least. Yeah.
Yeah. And so he was one of our coaches. So there was like the two dads and Kevin. And I remember kind of like crying on their shoulder, like, I want to do this, but I don't know how. And then, so they were like, oh, just keep coming, you'll be all right. And like, so the three of them, they coached us from that eighth grade team up until we graduated. Like we played from eighth grade to 12th grade. It was basically the same group of like maybe there was 16 girls that came and went between those years, but like, it was the same core of us. You know, back at that time, there was like gas money that you needed to kind of come up with to like contribute and just different fees. And I was like worried about that. And so they just said, keep coming, we'll figure it out. And so I would say like the three of them, they just really reassured me. And then going through the actual process throughout those other years were just like everyone's parents, right? So usually when we would travel, parents would take off work and they would come with their, you know, their kid. And mm-hmm. no one ever made me feel like different or bad for not being able to have my parents there. My parents actually got divorced when I was in the eighth grade. And so when I started playing basketball, like even for the selects, my dad kind of had quickly gotten out of the picture. So it was just my mom. She literally worked 19 hours a day. She had opened a grocery store called Aiken's International Foods, and it's still on Sargent and Langside today. And she would open her store from 10 a.m. until 8 p.m. And then she would do her second job, which was home care, from midnight till 8 a.m. So she literally worked 19 hours a day. And so I had nobody around to help me. And so that's kind of why I joke about it being like the blind side situation. Like it wasn't like I came from a bad environment, but I just didn't have that family support there. Like I had what I needed materially, but I didn't have any other support outside of that in terms of just like getting me to places and whatever. So I would say that it was definitely like the three coaches and then like the basketball moms that just kind of took me in, would always bring me snacks and food, would always have a space for me in their car. I can guarantee that there was things I never paid for that I should have paid for. I wouldn't even know. Like, yeah. I'm an adult now looking back at the situation being like, wow, you know? So
it
literally saved my life. And it put me on a path of like discipline and just being surrounded by people who like really cared about me and had my best interests at heart. And I say it saved my life because I genuinely don't know what I would have filled that time with, you know?
That's a big testimonial for mentors right there. I mean, you just said it, right? Like, I think a lot of us have that. I have a similar story. I interviewed people who have the same story. Like, I didn't meet these people or I didn't have these types of experiences. I don't know. Can't even tell you. Right. But, that's super important. And you said you played with them all the way up until high school, that same group.
Yeah. So we were this like little weird ghetto bootleg, like AAU team. Because we made a team. There was no club teams at this point. So this was like my kind of career preceded like everything that is normal now. So like the fact that there's like the Peg City League or like these club team leagues, like there was nothing like that. We were the Winnipeg Selects. Our team was amazing. And so we had to play women's league teams. Like we would play women's league teams. It got to the point where they didn't even want to play us because we would consistently beat them. And so it was to the point where we almost didn't even have local competition. So we would have to travel regularly to go play in Regina, go play in the States, take any competitive tournament that was like slightly affordable that we could find. And so we did that for like four or five years. And so on that team, I think that there was me, Debbie Yeboah, and I'm trying to think if there was anybody else who played like university. I think it was just me and Debbie who played at the university level. But it wasn't because of skill. We just were the athletes and like we had the physical ability to continue. Like all of my teammates and like, they're my friends to this day. Like they were all just as skilled as me. It was just a matter of like ability and size and things like that.
For sure. For sure. So during this time as well, you obviously went on to play at Oak Park.
Yeah.
That's correct. Yeah. So you went, so like during this time you're at Oak Park, you graduated. Did you play like, is Oak Park, I think it starts in the ninth grade for French immersion. Like, were you there from the start or was that like a transfer decision?
Yeah, no. So like my school was K-8 and then that fed into Oak Park. And then so Oak Park actually for the longest time, I don't know when it stopped, but it's not like that anymore. The grade nines at Oak Park were just basically 25 kids from Winwillingham. And so, cause like Charleswood There was a bunch of schools that fed into Oak Park, but it started in the 10th grade because they would take English 10th graders, but not English and French 10th graders. But in grade 9, it was only for French immersion just because there was this like awkward, there was a lot of awkward things happening with feeder schools. Like Vincent Massey is actually the school I probably should have gone to because it was geographically closer to my house. It's just like up McGilvery. And my house actually faced onto McGilvery, my backyard. But Vincent Massey only started for French immersion in the 10th grade.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And then there was also Shaftesbury, which started, I think, for English in the 9th grade, but didn't have French immersion. And so like your only option was to go to Oak Park or to go to Calvin. Mm-hmm. Those two schools started in the 9th grade for French immersion. And so I actually went to the Kelvin open house just because that would have been like my transferring out of my whatever. And then I was like, oh, I'm just going to go to Oak Park. Obviously, I'd heard really good things about it. And I was excited to get to play for this basketball dynasty.
yeah, exactly.
And so my whole career, people would actually just like look at me. And this is kind of like maybe like, I don't know, like, bias where people look at you and they kind of make assumptions because the male program actually had a lot of like male athletes that would come from like Transcona. Like, I played with, shout out Colin Tibbs. He literally came from Transcona.
So that's true.
That was kind of, I think what people would think when you kind of looked like you didn't belong, like nobody ever assumed you grew up in Linden Woods and like was supposed to go to Oak Park. That I was a French immersion kid that was supposed to go to Oak Park. So I would have to tell people like, no, this is not even a school of choice. Like, this is a school that I'm supposed to go to. There's a charter bus that drives through my neighborhood and takes me. So I went there and I was excited to play on this basketball dynasty. I was supposed to play with Tessa and Kayla Clayson and Katie Gooch. And so they were 1 year older than me. So like on the JV team, I would have been the 9th grader. They would have been 10th.
Yeah.
And then I was all excited. And I just remember this is like, I'm also like just getting into provincial team. I'm kind of like, you see people, it's like, oh, who is this? Oh, that's Katie Gooch. You know, she's a good shooter or whatever. And then you hear of that there's like, they live in Charleswood. I'm like, okay, bet. Like we're all going to be at the same school together. And then to only get there and then hear that Katie Gooch is going to Glenlawn and that the twins are going to like FRC or something. And so they actually chose to go to different schools. And I think that there was like kind of some like, like club scene stuff behind all of that. I just remember being kind of like devastated, but also like too naive to know that that was like it for me. Like, like I was like, oh, it's okay. Like, it doesn't matter. You know, like I've got Murray Brown that I get to score and like, it's going to be okay. And so it wasn't okay. ironically, my years at Oak Park, like we were never a strong team. Really. We never even made it to the provincial Final Four. Like how sad is that? Like, I'm pretty sure that if you talk to Murray, he will tell you that that was like probably some of his slowest years in terms of just advancement through provincials. Cause I never even got to play at U of M. Like I just was like, I'm going to play at U of M. We're going to be in the Final Four. Like, you'll see me on Shaw someday. That never happened. The best years, I kind of explained this to you before, was when I was in the 9th grade, the varsity team won the provincials that year. And I kind of started to like put the pieces of the puzzle together then that like, I didn't think that my team would be traditionally good on paper. And so this was kind of like my only chance to potentially, you know, be part of something. And so I remember talking to like Randy Cassano, Murray Brown, Stu Nixon was like the football coach at the time, like talking to anybody that would listen to me, like Clapic, like, hey, if you can just like convince, you know, Mr. Brown to let me play on the varsity team. Like, I know I'm in the 9th grade, even if I can just play, you know, up for one or two games, but their team was completely stacked. Like watching them even practice was kind of like my first exposure to like just like the beauty, the real beauty of basketball and just like how athletic like females could be. Like I would just sit there and like watch them and be like, okay, like I'm gonna like, it just gave me something to aspire to, right? And so I tried to beg my way onto the team. And of course they were like, no, like, you're in the ninth grade. You're not coming and like taking anybody's playing time and disrupting our dynamic here. And so that team went on to win provincials. But then after that, it was kind of like just me and Mr. Brown and, you know, my teammates, who most of them didn't play basketball actually even outside of school. Like, there was my friend Alex Queck, whose mom was like completely instrumental in just my life. Like, she literally drove me everywhere. I would go to their house after school. They drove me to practices, games. She would make me dinners and lunches and brownies. Like, her mom was like my second mom in high school. Mm-hmm. And Alex played on my Selects, which we later turned it into the Manitoba Blaze. We renamed it and changed it. But we played club team together. And so her mom would really take care of the two of us. But I think that we were pretty much like me, Alex. Then there was a teammate named Colleen. There was Jess Stromberg. There was maybe like my whole career, four or five girls who played basketball outside of school. The rest of the girls, like ringette athletes and like, I don't know, played hockey and they were dancing.
Yeah.
It was tough times. It was
tough. Well, I mean, you had, again, all that aside, you obviously had a good individual career. I mean, we talked about in the bio, like in your intro there, just some of the opportunities you had as a young athlete, recognized early, people really, you know, hey, like, she can really play. She's a great athlete. I read it also in your bio that, that, you know, there was some recruitment of some NC2A schools and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, you chose Winnipeg. So maybe tell us a little bit about, coming out of high school, choosing Winnipeg, what your other opportunities were, and how that process went.
Yeah. So when I went to Nike camp in the eighth going into ninth grade, that was actually ninth going into 10th grade. So that was after my first season of making like the official provincial team. And so I went from like not making it the year before to that final team to the next year, I'm guessing at probably Adam at Basketball Manitoba or whoever was involved at the time said like, okay, like we need to, because I mean, in a way, like Ontario kind of monopolized at that point, the talent of the basketball pipeline, right? Like a lot of the girls who played back then, like if you played at a Division I, you know, US college, you basically came from Ontario and you were basically identified by the pipeline that was there, which was like the head of that was Allison and Mike McNeil, who were the head coaches of the senior women's national team. And so, you know, they would, if I lived in Ontario, they'd be like, oh, there's this Amy girl. She's good. Let's get her in the pipeline. Maybe one day we'll recruit her to Oregon because they were the head coaches at the University of Oregon. When I played in the national team program, like years later, like as an adult, when you actually talk to most of the girls, 80 to 90% of them were from Ontario. And they all played at Division I colleges, but it made up like three colleges, right? And so basically what happened was there was like a very strong, those colleges had Canadian connections and they recognized that there was Canadian talent and they would just be like, oh, this is like easy game, right? Like no one knows about these kids. I can recruit them here. End of story, done. And so it's not like that anymore. Like obviously the world is just much more kind of globalized. But that was kind of the only way to be recognized to even make it to that level. And so the Nike camp, what it was they would invite 50 players. And I think that was kind of like their stab at being equitable, you know? Yeah. So they would invite the 50 players and say 40 of them would come from Ontario. And then there were like the 10 from elsewhere. Yeah. And so when you think about it, it was actually amazing that I was invited. And I don't know if it was a bit of like a tokenism thing. Like we need one kid from Manitoba, like, and then somebody said, choose Amy. And so I went and I remember again, stressed, completely overwhelmed. I was there alone. There was no other coaches there really that I knew. And the drill work that we did was all based off of like kind of Canada basketball developmental drills that they did like in their sleep. Like all of these kids were getting that training in Ontario and I had never seen or heard of any of these drills. It literally brought me back to not knowing the difference between offense and defense.
Yeah.
I just remember being kind of overwhelmed, but I did perform really well. And so again, like another blindside moment, there's literally bleachers and we were at like Humber College or something. And the bleachers were just filled with NCAA scouts. And we did like a class in media training. Like we went through all this different stuff. And so all of my Division One, Two, and Three offers came from that Nike camp. And so basically as I went through life, like from the ninth, that was like, I was in the 10th grade basically that I hadn't started, but it was like the summer before I went to the 10th grade. From then until when I graduated, it was just interest from those initial schools who had like looked at me, kind of saw me at my worst, to be honest, because it was overwhelming. And we're like, okay, we have some interest in you. Like, can we discuss and blah, blah, blah. But with that said, bringing things back to reality of like nothing being a fairy tale, I had like no real guidance in terms of like my parents. I was like overwhelmed to even do the, like my SATs. My parents, like I said, had gotten like divorced a few years prior to this like attention. And my mom was like a single mom with three kids running a store downtown Winnipeg. Where she worked 19 hours a day. And like, I was like her one reliable kid that could like come and sit behind the till if she needed to do something. Right. And, so yeah, long story short, I like had a bit of a connection with Tanya McKay. She basically did like what we now call officially player development work. She basically was just like, hey, like, I really want you to work on your footwork. I really want you to like improve your game. Like there's no strings attached to this. Like, which I mean, Tanya is just like a genius recruiter. Like,
oh yeah,
of course there's strings attached to this, but yeah. She was kind of just like, there's no strings attached to it. Like, you don't owe me anything. You know, I do this program called Take Me On every Sunday at River East. Like if you can get a ride there, like you can have free training, no problem. And so I just kind of like through provincial teams, that experience, I developed a close relationship with Tanya and like, I just really grew to trust her. And then, so when you think about like, even just like my mom's situation and the fact that she had like a store downtown Winnipeg, it just kind of made sense. And then when I was actually going to watch the UW games, this was kind of during their like dynasty years of like hosting nationals, being in the national finals. I grew up watching like Uzo, like Sally, and just girls that were like unreal athletes, unreal scorers, like amazing defenders, like Jenny Ezrim. Like I just remember like sitting there and being so excited to be a part of that maybe. And so It wasn't like some default option. It wasn't like, oh, you know, you weren't recruited anywhere else. I literally was like, I'm being recruited other places, but like as of even the 11th grade, I was kind of like, I'm pretty sure like I'm just gonna stay in Winnipeg. Like I like this Tanya lady. My mom's store is really sweet. And
yeah.
Their teams are amazing. Like I want to be a part of this. So yeah.
It ended up being just a really easy decision, a natural fit.
Totally. Yeah. It was a natural fit. Yeah. And like, I had a lot of like pride, like attached to it. Like I felt good about making that decision. Like it didn't feel like a downgrade or like I was settling at all. So.
We talked in your bio again, just obviously you had some immediate success, right? Like you were, you had all rookie team, rookie of the year for the conference for Canada West as well. Did you play 5 or 4 years there?
I played five.
Yeah. And so when we were going over, obviously we go over the guests, hey, like, this is your bio. What do you think? Blah, blah, blah. And then you brought something up, which I do remember this. You look at the start of your career and you did go on to be a second team all-star later in your career as well. So it's not like, you had a bad career by any stretch, right? Like by all measurable things, like you had a really good career, but you had mentioned something offline just about some of the injury history that you kind of ran into that kind of really made it difficult for you to kind of continue to like expand your game and keep progressing.
Yeah. So my first year I was rookie all Canadian. And then actually they fly you out to nationals. You're part of the ceremony, rah, rah. And then that summer was 2008. So that was the summer that I played on the like student national team. And then we went to Beijing prior to the Olympics. And we actually played the Chinese national team in like a 3 or 4 game tour. And so basically we were playing the team that qualified for the Olympics because they were hosting, and it was kind of like a chance for, you know, Chinese nationals to see their national team play in like a pre-exhibition Olympic, you know, games. And so I did that experience. I came back. I was like, I think I was the heaviest I had ever been on the scale, but I was just like ripped, like just solid muscle. I had such a great experience with that national team. It really kind of like put me on a trajectory just to take my training and nutrition more seriously. Like I was just so excited about my future. Getting to be around girls who played pro and who had played division, you know, won basketball, it kind of just opened my eyes to just like even the idea of having an agent and kind of going down that road someday. And so I was really excited about that. And so then I went into my second year of university with the Westman. I remember talking with Tanya, her like saying that she had even like noticed a change in me. Like, you know, we had like a really great conversation just about kind of like what the future would look like. And then I don't know, maybe like a month in to the season, I was in help side defense and someone threw a skip pass and I went to go steal it. Cause I like love just playing dumb as an athlete. Like I would always kind of make you think to pass it just so I could steal it. And so I remember I was like playing dumb and like obviously cutting it close, right? Because I wanted the girl to think that she could receive that skip pass. And so as I was going to get the steal, you know, it was a bit of a dirty play because she, you know, she realized later than what I realized that I was going to steal it. And so I remember like having my arm stretched out to go steal it. And she just like body checked me. And I remember my shoulder just, I actually got the steal. I think I like stiff armed her and like grabbed the ball and started dribbling with my left hand up the court. And I just remember trying to cross over to my right hand and dribble and I couldn't dribble. And then I remember just holding my arm and like throwing the ball off and just trying to walk off the court. And I started freaking out. I was like, something's wrong with my shoulder. Something's wrong with my arm. I had never really been seriously injured before. Long story short, I had like a third degree shoulder separation. And so, yeah, like the little ligaments between like my clavicle and my scapula ruptured. And from that moment on, I had like crazy shoulder injuries, both shoulders, like even my good shoulder, which wasn't even affected. My shoulders just started subluxing all the time. So like, if I would go, even once I rehabbed, if I would go into like an overhead position, and especially if we always used to call it getting like haloed. So like if you're under the rim and like, and then you're trying to reach back or reach to the side, my shoulders would legit just pop out of place. And it never got to the point where they would dislocate fully, but they would always like slip off the track. And so I think like the end of that year, I got fitted for something called like a Sully brace. And I literally had to wear this huge brace that, I don't know if you've ever seen it, but it basically has all of these straps and it's just designed to keep your shoulder in place. And it's not even a functional brace. Like it's not something that people would play in. It's usually something that you wear if your shoulder, like you wouldn't use it typically to play a sport like basketball. Especially because you're shooting against resistance, right?
Exactly, and so
it's holding your shoulder down and you're trying to extend it up. And so I had to basically from that point learn how to shoot. I would go to shoot arounds and like light practices without my brace on. And so I literally have to like recalibrate my whole body to shoot against resistance and with resistance. And then like shoot with my left hand sometimes when it made more sense to shoot with my right hand. And so at that point, it went from being like talking to Tanya, having that experience with the national team to being like, this isn't in the cards for me. Like I can manage this, but like, I'm not going to be able to enjoy the game the way that I used to, knowing that my shoulders can dislocate at any second. And so like from year 2 to 5, I like thugged it out and I played with that, but I knew that I wouldn't play pro. Like it just wasn't. That made sense to do.
So. Yeah. And that's you know, that's a story that you hear from so many athletes, just the injury bug, right? And it's super unfortunate because you always wonder like, was there some type of training I could have done, or was that inevitable at some point, like just the way I play, whatever happened the next game or next year. So, I mean, again, obviously, you know, in life, you don't want to play those what if games, but it is like something that so many athletes have gone through. Right. Like it's not an uncommon thing. And sometimes it ends up being a, you know, your story just ends up as a different version of a story in another multiverse that, you know, Amy's playing pro somewhere, and another one, she didn't even start playing basketball, right? Because, you know, Mr. Toes wasn't there, right? So this is the way kind of life goes. But so you got into coaching after that. And, you know, you got some, you talked about in your intro as well, you had some really big opportunities to do stuff with the national team as well. You coached provincial team, you coached the TAP program, you're coaching at Maples. But I kind of want to fast forward through that. And again, like, you could bring back the end of this stuff, but I'm super curious because now you're coaching like toddlers. So with this program, right? And I know we didn't bring this up in the intro, but you have like three young kids. So I mean, talk a little bit about how you got into coaching, but then also in that same kind of story, tell us how you transitioned into coaching toddlers.
So again, Tanya McKay, she introduced me to probably like the technical side of basketball. Like, she was one who made me fall in love with footwork. Like, to this day, like, if I like watch somebody establishing for a layup, like, it's just like next level fun for me. Like, she just made me fall in love with footwork, fall in love with skill work, fall in love with like just getting better on your own. And she was really the person who gave me like the tools to know what to do and how to train by myself without anybody else in the gym. And so she introduced me to that side of like player development, but she also introduced me to like kind of like coaching, right? Because like, it was my first time, not taking anything away from like Murray or like my other club coaches, but like I was being coached more in a team system and more in like a group setting, right? And so it was my first time really just seeing like somebody's coaching brain work. And you know, it made me want to play for her. But then once I started playing for her, she started, I think, just like from a practical standpoint, giving me coaching opportunities that would pay me, right? Just so that I could have opportunities for work. And then I didn't really know what I wanted to do when I went into university, and I was kind of on the path to potentially do social work. So I started taking sociology courses and then said to her, like, I don't really know what I want to do. And she kind of encouraged me to go into education and then just kept giving me more coaching opportunities. And so she was kind of like the one who like mentored that process and gave me like a lot of autonomy just to do like what I kind of wanted for like the Westman summer camps and things like that. And then once I was in education, like, I just kind of like went with it on my own. Cause I'm like, okay, well, I know that I want to be a teacher now. And like, I want to be a Randy Cassano or Murray Brown. Like, I want to, you know, give back and like, I want to contribute, you know. At that point I had like a really good relationship too with Dan Becker. And so I had kind of just like been, I had started to kind of like get to learn about like coaches and how they think and what they do and why they do the things that they do. And so by the time that I graduated, I was excited to coach a varsity girls team and to do high performance coaching. I got actually pre-hired to Seven Oaks. So I got hired to the division like on reading week. And so at the time, the superintendent of personnel was a guy named Dwayne Brothers, who comes from a very athletic family, has lots of history at U of M. His daughter plays there now. So he pre-hired me to the division and then told me that I would be at Garden City or Maples. And so I ended up being at Maples. And that was really hard for me not being at Maples. Like, I didn't know that I would love Maples, and I absolutely love it. Like, I don't know if I would ever change schools. Like, I love Maples Collegiate. The kids are amazing. The staff is great. I've had different admin there and they've all been great. The thing that was hard was that I speak French. So I kind of thought that I would be placed at Garden City. And so that was a bit of like I'm never going to use my French now. So I'm probably going to lose it.
Yeah.
And then also, obviously, between Garden City and Maples, Garden City is the one that most athletes will choose to go to out of choice. And so I kind of thought, well, you know what? Like, they're going to see me. They're going to see that I coach provincial team. This is like sounds good, but we have two gyms. We had two shooting machines, like two shooting machines. Like, I didn't even have a shooting machine like the ones that we have at Maples when I was in university. You have a brand new fitness facility that's like, I don't know, my guess would be 2,000 square feet, like 1,500 square feet. Like, it was our old school cafeteria with like state of the art equipment. every single person who coached there and even the admin were like basketball people. Like it was like what we did. Yeah. So I kind of just thought like, okay, like kids and families are going to see that and they're not going to opt out of coming to Maples, or they're going to opt into coming to Maples.
Yes.
And that was kind of like, it was hard for me because it just made me realize that people can sometimes be kind of like sheepish, right? Like, you know, you hear that Garden City is the place you should go. And so you don't want to risk, you don't want to do something different and be wrong. Right. And,
yes.
And so I genuinely, not putting Garden City's program down, but like, if you actually compare just like the playing and coaching experience of the two schools at the time, it didn't make sense that like athletes still didn't want to come to Maples, you know? And so I was coaching like K-PAC tier two teams of girls who like didn't play basketball outside of school. And so people would ask me all the time, like, oh, do you still live in Winnipeg?
Really?
Yeah, because no one ever saw me. Like, I would put us into like the quad A kind of caliber tournaments just because I wanted my girls just to compete and I wanted to see friends and things. And we would actually do really well in those tournaments considering, right? Like we weren't even playing in tier one and we would play in tier one tournaments. Also my husband's from Austin, Texas. So that's kind of part of like what made me change like my trajectory as coaching. And so I think people would sometimes assume like, oh, you moved to Texas. And I'm like, no, I coach at Maples. but it was a great experience because like the girls, I just relate so much to them. And so as much as I wasn't getting like the experience of getting to coach high performance, like I thought that I would when I was leaving university, we made it a high performance. And I say we, it was me. Like I legit don't think I had assistant coaches for a few years. I made it a high performance like experience for the girls and they got an amazing experience out of it. And I can just so relate to the kids at Maples. Like most of them are first generation Canadians or they are like immigrants who came here when they were really young. Their parents work shift work. Their parents work two or three jobs. You know, they're on their own a lot of the times when it comes to just like keeping themselves busy and out of trouble. So it means when I look at it, I relate so well to those kids that I'm not disappointed that that's kind of the kind of coaching that I get to do. And now like I was watching on Instagram, some highlight video, cause now JV teams have highlight videos. I was watching like the Maples girls on the highlight video. And I'm just like, oh my goodness. Like these girls play basketball outside of school. Like I can just, like, be like, okay, like you're not doing that. Like, reverse layup just because like you play basketball. It's just really cool now to see that like that's kind of like, and that's just like the progression of like upward mobility through becoming Canadians. Like that's what it is. Like a lot of these Punjabi girls that I'm seeing like literally hoop are like first generation Canadians or they came here when they were younger, their parents have been here for long enough, basketball is now kind of, I guess the PR of it might be a little bit more out there and better because of media and like the work that Basketball Manitoba has been doing. And so it's just really cool now to see like a demographic of kids that would have been kind of unserved, that would have started playing basketball like in the seventh, eighth, ninth grade, you know, starting to play on like club teams earlier. And like Sook Singh is doing like his attack program out of Seven Oaks. And so I was saying to my husband, like, I just feel like the next wave of athletes are just all going to be like brown kids, like from like Indian backgrounds and like, it's just super cool. So I'm super happy to be a part of that. And I did a little stint with provincial team, got married, and then kind of just decided like, that was when I was kind of thinking about like, okay, basketball chose me. I didn't choose basketball. Like at this point, I need to kind of reevaluate what else I want to do with my life. Like, I married this poor guy from Texas. Like, what is he going to do? Just sit at our house all the time while I'm like coaching provincial teams and on my summer off, you know? And so, I kind of like reevaluated just like the hamster wheel of like, okay, well, now you're doing TAP, which means you should do provincial team, which means you should maybe do a club team. At the same time, kind of as your high school season, and then it just doesn't end.
Yeah.
And that was kind of one of the things where I have to like step back and just, before I even had kids, be like, okay, like how much time do you want to commit to coaching? And like, what are your goals? Like, my goal wasn't to be a university coach.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to kind of just like reevaluate like what I was doing and why, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. For sure. For sure. So all that happens, but like I said, you're back. So you step away, obviously, and you got the young kids, but we're back. So, I mean, you got to tell me a little bit else. You can't just skip that part of the story. So we got to this point, but you step away and then you say, hey, my kids are old enough. Let's coach them. Was it as simple as that? Or was there more to it?
Yeah. So I have three kids. My kids are 4, 3 in January and 1 in January. So we'll say 4, 3, and 1. The first two are 18 months apart and the second and third are 2 years apart. And so very much like the savage athlete mentality that I am, I was like, okay, like, let's just run through the fire. Let's not walk. Like, I want to have kids, but I don't want to have them all like spread out. Like, I don't want to be up and down and like getting sleep. Like, let's just do this. So I knew I wanted to have my kids close in age. And so the good thing about that is you can kind of get like more out of your mat leaves, right? Because like you're just doing back-to-back mat leaves.
For sure, for sure, for sure.
So on my second mat leave, it was COVID. And then I was kind of like, okay, I should do my post-bac. Like all of the courses are online, easy time to do my post-bac. So I did a 30 credit hours of courses in like two terms. Like I did the winter term and the spring term. I did my post-bac. I did 7 courses in the spring. And so I was like, okay, that's done with. So now I'm on to my third mat leave and just kind of thought, you know, this is a good opportunity to do a business. Like I have the time, like it's going to involve me kind of working on my mat leave and building something. But I, you know, looking around, there was my oldest daughter was 3.5-ish when I started the business.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's 4 now, so it's only been it's been half a year kind of thing. And so, thinking about the programs that were available to her, it was always like dance and skating, soccer. And, you know, now there's like this up and coming generation of people just like me. And if I go on like Facebook now, like, you know, all of these former high performance athletes have like a 1 or 2 or 3 year old. And
true.
Our options are kind of to put our kids in like soccer, dance, gymnastics, and like nothing's wrong with any of those things. I think it's super important to do a variety of things. But a lot of it just comes down to like your own sanity and trying to keep your kids busy and just get them involved in things that will promote movement and opportunities just for like social exploration and like, you know, just getting out there, especially post COVID. And so the idea of just like the little tykes hoop, and you know, like what that would look like if you were to kind of like bring it down to its most basic level for like a 1, 2, 3 year old. Because all of us have little tykes hoops. Like if you have a kid and you play basketball, 100%. What's one of the first things you get for them?
100%. 100%.
Like you like pretend to dunk on them for fun, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what it was. And so we have this program, I have this program called miniballers.ca. And so we bring in 4 hoops and the hoops go from 3 feet to 7 feet. Obviously a standard basketball hoop is 10 feet. And then in a gym, it would normally lower down to 8 feet. And so part of the problem that like even the junior MBA programming has is like, if you have those programs are for 5 to 7 year olds. And so if you have a 5-year-old, in that program, a lot of them can't ever hit an 8-foot hoop. Like you crank it down and you bring it down, but like they just aren't strong enough to even hit that. And then it's a volunteer run program. And so you have like one dad or one mom or like a pair of parents trying to like wrangle 20, I think the cap size is 20, 25 to 7 year old kids, right? And so it's kind of just overwhelming for everybody and not all of the kids achieve success and not all of the parents are really even familiar enough with basketball to know how to kind of like bring it down to a really, really simple level. And so I kind of just felt like this program addressed that and that it just kind of gives the opportunity to not only focus on like just letting all of the kids, you know, achieve that success with basketball skills, but also like the movement skills, right? So like hand-eye coordination, agility, balance, you know, targeting and catching, like all of those skills that I know about from being an athlete and then also just from being a phys ed educator, right? And so I kind of wrote the curriculum, I kind of planned backwards, laid out everything that I thought.
Yeah, so like with the hoops, a standard basketball hoop is 10 feet, it gets lowered down to 8 feet. And so if you're doing like junior NBA is for 5 to 12 year olds, the first group is 5 to 7. Or I think it's 5 to 6 and then 7 to 8. So like if you have 5 to 6 year olds, the cap size for those programs is roughly 20 and it's led by volunteers. So, you know, one of the things that I've actually heard from parents is that when they bring their kids to introductory basketball programs, that they it's hit or miss because people, their intentions are good, but if you're volunteering, like what happens when you get sick or you get caught late at work or whatever. Right. And so then parents will say, like, especially when you have a 5 or 6 year old, like the last thing you want is to like get all loaded in the car and then to show up and the practice is canceled. Right.
For sure.
And so I just kind of felt like all of those pain points needed to be addressed. Like we need paid staff who like know what they're doing and who are trained. We need hoop heights that can move, like, you know, 8 feet isn't gonna cut it for a 5 year old. Like most of them will never make a basket and the programs are 12 weeks long. Like that's so discouraging, you know. And so we have hoops that go from 3 feet to 7 feet. And so then if a kid is strong enough or, you know, ambitious enough to go to 8 feet or even higher, then they can just do that on the hoops that are in the gym. And then basketball sizes, like we have a variety of basketball sizes. Like we have from like the tiniest little ball that would come with like a little Tykes hoop all the way up to like a size 5 basketball that a kid would use at that age. And then also just really focusing on like, it's almost, I would say it's almost more of a movement program with basketball sprinkled in. Like we focus more on like movement skills and basics. So addressing all of like the skill related fitness components, things like speed, agility, balance, coordination, hand-eye coordination. And then, just we, the skills that we do address with basketball are dribbling, shooting and passing. And then we don't focus at all on like any really live play. And so it just kind of gives the kids and their families literally as early as 1 in the parent assisted classes up to 8, where they can at that point go on and play in attack or play in the WNBA or play in whatever they want to do. It gives them that early introduction where they can come. There's 3 coaches in every session. The hoop heights vary. It's really important to me for the program to be accessible. So it's wheelchair accessible. We've done a little bit of work with Wheelchair Basketball Manitoba, and that's a partnership that I really want to, you know, continue to like develop just because there's really nothing like Wheelchair Manitoba can't even provide programming for kids that young. And so if we can find a way to provide the programming with their support, then, you know, we do have a little girl in a wheelchair and she's 5 and it just gives her the ability to just feel normal and to do something that she loves. And she actually had the ability, she lost her ability to walk. So his memories are playing sports and doing the things that, you know, the able-bodied kids are doing. And so to be able to give that opportunity is just like so priceless to me. And as a mom, it's just like so important. Like I wouldn't I wouldn't feel right about doing this programming if it can't be as accessible as absolute possible. I just feel like that's necessary. So yeah, it's gone really well. The earliest age range is like is 1, but then from 1 to 3.5, it's parent assisted. And so that's where like, you know, you're a new dad or mom.
You
have your like, I don't know, who's like somebody you've, some of the athletes that you've interviewed here, right? They have like a 1-year-old kid. They're all excited.
Yeah.
At some point, they're excited to watch them play basketball or some sport for real. But in the meantime, they're just like a young dad or mom just trying to keep their little kid busy. Right. And then so you come with them and you just like play with them and we take you through a little bit of a class and it gives them that introduction to social skills too. And kind of being in a group, and we incorporate like early learning basics. So we do a lot of like numeracy, color matching, we do like singing in the youngest group. So it's been really, really, really good. And obviously it fits like where my kids are at right now.
Mm-hmm. My kids were all early walkers. They all started walking when they were like 9 or 10 months old. So just kind of gives families that basketball related outlet, not like soccer, watching the kids all chase the ball or like,
Just smash into each other around the ball.
Yeah. I mean, it's all good. Like all of those experiences are just like valuable and they really are priceless memories if anything, but
for sure,
like a basketball related option for people. Yep.
Well, exactly. Right. And I think at the end of the day, it's like, whether or not those kids go on to play basketball, it's like the parents wanted to give their child a chance to try a sport. Just like you said, there's soccer. It was reminding me a lot of when parents start to, they have like the swimmers. So like you're in the water with your kid and you're like, okay, dunk them underwater. And like, that's what the vibes it gives me right away. Cause it's like, you're trying to give them movement skills and fun. Right. Yeah. And like you said, an outlet, but it's surrounding basketball. So they see the hoop, right? There's a ball, right? And like down the line, they might say, oh, I really like that. And you're trying to create this grid environment, just like with the water, although there's a safety element to it, but you're trying to create a good relationship with the water. So they're not scared of it. Right. So it very much reminds me of that same thing. And I think like, again, whether or not the kids go on and play after, that's besides the point, right? It's like, what are they doing now? And again, it's just another outlet for basketball. And obviously we're basketball people. So we're like, yes, this is great. I want to transition from that and thinking about some of, because we're getting close to the end here.
Yeah.
I want to ask you straight up, is what one of your most memorable basketball moments or story is. And it's kind of fitting because, you know, some of these people in your program inevitably will go on to play basketball. Like they will go on and play. Like it's just, as long as you're around, like there's going to be a player, right? WNBA had tons of players. So we flash back and look at your entire career. What are some memories that stand out? If there was one or a few that kind of stand out to you, what are they when I ask you that question? What comes to mind?
So it's funny. I almost like, I was thinking about this before. I'm like, oh, what's he going to ask me? And then I was thinking, oh, I should call Tanya. Cause, I don't remember the exact details of this scenario, but basically what it was, is it was, I think the Duckworth Challenge or we were playing U of M. So it was either Duckworth Challenge or just like a game playing U of M at U of W. And we won the game, or I won the game. After the game ended.
What?
Right? Like, does that make sense? Is that possible? No. And so I remember at the time Tanya posted a video on like Facebook or something and she called it like 1 second. And so I kind of wish that somebody could explain this better than me because I don't remember the exact circumstances, but U of M, we are going back and forth, slowly losing our lead. And they scored a basket to put them up by one. And so we got the ball to inbound it. And then like they scored, we got it on defense, got the ball to inbound it, going on offense the other way. There was like, say, 3 seconds left at that point, or four seconds. And so we had lost the game because now we're going transition to try to score with 4 seconds. And we had a timeout, but we had no timeouts left. We had no timeouts left. And so the clock was supposed to stop, right? So after a basket, and they didn't stop. So I remember someone on our team, if it wasn't me, someone went to go inbound it and we were all like, no, like, we had 4 seconds. And so we had no timeout, but like we got a timeout essentially, because like both teams went back to their bench while the refs gave us our pity seconds back. I remember Tanya was just so mad at us. Like I don't think she even really coached us in our timeout, because we had lost the game and we had blown a lead, and it doesn't matter what they give us now. Like she doesn't even know how much time she's working with. Right. So even if we get the ball at half, like how many seconds are they going to give us? Right. And we were kind of like waiting, and then like, we all kind of like locked eyes and like looked at each other, and we made our own plan or something. And so then I feel like we got the ball and I got fouled in the act of shooting. And so, yeah, at that point, and then the buzzer went, like I got fouled on the buzzer in the act of shooting.
Yeah.
And then
no time left.
I was kind of nervous, but then I told myself like, oh, if you make one, the game's tied like 0-0. If you make two, you win. So it just kind of like took the pressure off. I'm like, you can make one. So I made the first one and then I'm like, okay, I'm making the second. Like this is fun now. Right. So I made the second and we won. And I just remember the look on the U of M girls' faces and just like, as a competitor, that's just so fun to see them being like so excited that, cause in my years of playing them, like they rarely beat us. We typically beat them. Right. So I just remember like the joy and excitement, and they had started cheering and the crowd was all cheering and people were crying and like, we did it. And then I got
crushed them
and ruined their day. And I almost remember after Tanya was kind of just like, I don't know how you guys, like, she was almost like shocked, right? Like the veteran coach that she was kind of just like, what just happened? Like, like it made total sense to give up on you guys. Like, why did you kind of thing?
Like, well, that's why we love basketball. Like the amount of times like these just weird scenarios happen, or like, you know, I've seen that before. Teams think they win and they didn't. And it's just like, it's always like, it's a roller coaster ride. And I think that's like the ride that we all kind of like going on. You know what I mean? Sometimes, even though we know like can't always win, but I think it's why we love the game so much. Like there's so much to be said about basketball. And I know people who are, you know, have their own sport bias. They're like, oh, whether it be football or American football or whatever, like they're going to have their own biases. But I mean, I think basketball, again, obviously can be completely biased, is special. And I think it is unique, but mainly because of the back and forth nature of it. It is unlike any other sport because you're constantly scoring. Right. Mm-hmm. It's like you're trying to stop the other team from scoring. In most sports, you're trying to score. It's hard. It's not easy to score, you know. In basketball, it's flipped. So that's why I always use that as my, like, when people are like, oh, well, it's for any sport. I'm like, well, I don't know. Basketball is a little different. So okay, last question here before we get off the air. This is the way I've been framing it recently. You're sitting in the room full of a bunch of younger players. Okay. Let's say like meet Team Manitoba or something. You're at Sport Manitoba. You're giving the talk like, hey, we have Amy here. You know what? She's had this long career. She's coached. She's done all these things. And you're there to offer some advice. And someone lifts their hand up and says, hey, like, you know what? I'm new to basketball. I'm like you, like, you know, like don't really know what's going on there, but they're on the provincial team. They're there. I don't really know much.
Yeah.
Like, what was some advice that you would tell me to kind of keep me on the right path with regards to this game? I love it. I just don't know what to do. So what would you pass on to that type of question, or a young kid who's asking that type of question?
So like, and I would just encourage people, like, you don't need anything. Like what you put into things, you'll get out. Right. And like, even if it's not immediately obvious, even if it's like the discipline that you get as an adult, or like, you know, the perspective that you have as an adult, or even if it's like the benefits that you reap as an athlete, or the kind of person that you become, or the relationships that you get to develop. Like, you know, as you and I both know, like the basketball community in Manitoba is like very, you know, it's very tight knit in terms of just like, you know, people who have dedicated their lives at some point to the game. Right. And so, it's just, it is a privilege to get to like, to get to dedicate yourself to something like that. And I always talk about the process of mastery and just how I don't care if you're playing piano or like in this case, basketball, it's just amazing to get to focus your energy and attention on something like that and can kind of be given permission to be selfish, if that makes sense, in terms of just like your pursuit of that. That's what makes it like so fun and such a beautiful life-changing, life-transforming process. And like the skills that you benefit from are just so hard earned. Like no one can ever take that from you. Your life can change for better or for worse, and like those experiences never go away, right? And what those experiences mean to you never get diluted, right? And so I would just say like, that's what I I would encourage people to do. It was like, think of the big picture, but then also like focus on the process of mastery, because that's like the rep by rep, right? So it's kind of like focusing on like the micro and just like perfecting your craft and your skill and being thankful that you have the ability to even do that. Like, be thankful for that, right? And then that makes you like just feel excited about getting to like explore where that takes you. But then also in the background is the big picture of knowing that like all of those little moments, those literal reps, are just going to benefit you for the rest of your life.
Well, that is good advice. We will end on that. Just before we jump real quick, you didn't mention, obviously, you have a website, I'm assuming, social media for the program. Might as well plug it, because we're guessing it's Mini Ballers, but in case it isn't.
Yeah, so our website is www.miniballers.ca, and then our Instagram is miniballersmb. Our program is for 1 to 8 year old boys and girls. It's fully wheelchair accessible. And yeah, the first, the beginning ages, 1 to 3.5 are parent assisted, and then 3.5 to 8 is just coach led. And then we have gyms located all over the city. So we have like a North location at a called Templeton. We're at the U of W Recplex for Central. And then we also are out of Linden Woods Community Center. And then we also are out of Fort Richmond Community Center in Fort Richmond. So yeah, we have locations like North, Central, South, and yeah, I love it. Like, it's so fun. And it's fun because I should mention this, like the irony of this are the head coaches that we have. If you look on our website, our bios, I just think it's hilarious, because like our head coaches would probably be like headhunted to coach like some kind of high performance club team for girls.
So I looked. Yeah, I was myself, like, oh, this is this is a staff right here.
Yeah, we have myself, Megan Newman, and then Sarah Riley, who's done a lot of coaching too. So yeah, it's an amazing program.
Good. Well, I wish you luck with the program. Obviously, spreading the good word with basketball, introducing people to the game. So that no offense, no shade at soccer. World Cup just ended, but obviously this is a basketball podcast. We're basketball people, so any chance that parents have to introduce their kids to the game, I'm all for. Thanks for taking the time, telling your story, and we'll say goodbye.
Goodbye. Thank you.
Okay. Take care. Thanks for listening to today's episode. Please like, subscribe, follow, and share this series, and reach out to us with your comments on the show. Thanks again for joining us.